going to give me a complex. Yeah. I was in South Dakota at one point, and we were doing a 50th anniversary for all the brethren, and he was going through all the pastors that had been in and who had served in that region in South Dakota. And then when they introduced to me, it was, oh, and our current pastor. And I was like, you know, do I need to be nervous? Am I? But it is good to be with all of you. I send greetings from the rest of my family, the better part. Well, except I have Sarah. So, sorry. You're lumped in with Dad. Sorry, hon. Mom and the two younger ones are home. The two younger ones have colds. Decided we wouldn't spread that around or share that with anyone. But they did miss out on getting to come down. And so Joy wanted to send her greetings and her love to all of you. Now, last year, it was actually April 24th of 2020. And you may have seen this in the news, possibly the world news. There was an Indonesian submarine that was lost. It was named the Kiri Nanggala, and it just went missing. There was no distress signal. There were no other ships in the area. There was no signs of an attack, and nothing like that. But this was a military submarine. And, of course, when something like that just disappears, tensions rise. People begin to worry. There's an immediate rush to search. And then they start checking with all the other nations, with all the other countries of, you know, what happened. Were you there? Or do you know anything about this? And, of course, it hit the news. And there was a humanitarian issue because there were 53 sailors on board as well. So this was on the news, and the next day, after they had not responded, ships went out and were searching the area where they believed the Nanggala was last seen. And on the surface, they found a small amount of debris, and they found some oil slicks, grease that had slowly risen to the surface. Now, no one knows exactly what happened to the Nanggala, why it went down, why it was sunk. They eventually found what was left of it. It was scattered across the ocean floor, well below 2,000 feet under the surface of the sea. And it was in pieces. All they knew was that whatever happened, it happened fast. It happened suddenly, very, very quickly. Now, there's speculation and rumors. They look at the history of submarines that have gone down in the past and things that may have happened. There was one speculation that with the age of the submarine, it's possible that they'd had an electrical failure. An electrical failure that would have happened, and they would not have been able to manage their systems, and that the submarine would have dropped very quickly below the crash depth in a way that they could not get their buoyancy back. They couldn't pump in enough air. But another thought is that it's possible that they were a military submarine. They were supposed to be doing military maneuvers and training and practicing. Is what if they had a faulty missile, or not a missile, but a torpedo, that may have been armed within the tube. Submarines have been lost that way before as well. There's another interesting scientific speculation is that there may have been some type of underwater wave, an undersea wave, that I've never even heard of one of these things, but apparently these types of things can happen. We're aware of tsunamis, waves that can happen because of a seismic movement that rises up and runs across the top of the ocean. And they said this would be something like that, but underneath. And that in that area, it would have caused there to be a change in the buoyancy of the water essentially, that the submarine would have sunk so quickly that, again, they could not have responded, they could not have reacted in time before they, too, were underneath the crush depth of the submarine. Again, no one knows exactly what happened, but they know that it happened very quickly. It happened suddenly, and they would not have been able to escape what was going on outside of their hull. They say the word that the submarine, once it dropped below a depth, that the pressures on the outside of the ship were stronger than the force or the strength of the hull, that which keeps the outside from rushing in. And so it would have imploded. This is like crushing a can, to collapse violently inwards upon itself. Now, an explosion is, of course, when pressures on the inside exceed the strength of what's containing it, and it explodes outwards. An implosion is just the opposite, that the pressure on the outside is stronger than what's keeping it out, and it's crushed, it implodes, it goes inside. Whatever happened, the pressure on the outside of the Nangala was greater than the strength of the ship. When you look around at the world today, does it feel like there is a great pressure that is building? A great pressure that's coming at everyone from every angle. The world, our nation. It can almost be like that submarine sinking into the depths. And we watch maybe the decline of our nation going down, feeling pressure. How many of you have ever in your life, you know, dove down to the bottom of a swimming pool? Yeah. If you remember that pressure that builds up in your head, you know, it's there. And you're only maybe 10 feet deep, maybe a little more. But as our nation descends, we are seeing cracks appear. Cracks in our nation's character, in our morality, and very evidently in our unity. The United States of America is extremely divided right now. We can see it all around us. If you've ever watched one of those old submarine movies, you know, World War II or something like that, where there's a battle going on and the submarines are diving, trying to get away and going deep, and maybe a ship is dropping depth charges. You know, I think of Run Silent, Run Deep, you know, and some of these great actors from the day, but they would go deeper and deeper, trying to escape. And then as they got deeper, it would get darker, and of course the pressures would build. And so often, they had taken damage of one form or another. Their hull was damaged. And you'd see water start to leak. You know, spraying out, and sailors desperately trying to clamp it off, and also trying to be incredibly quiet. And sometimes the tensions that were inside those submarines would boil over and they would turn on each other. I dare say that kind of fits with what's happening in our world today. When will that pressure become too great so that we might actually implode upon ourselves? You have to be wondering that as we look around. In the New Testament, the Greek word that is used for pressure is tribulation. If you look up that word in, say, Strong's dictionary, the very first word after it is pressure. That's what I'm going to be speaking about today, brethren. The title of my message is The Great Pressure. You know, when we talked about tribulation as a kid, and that was something we did a lot growing up in the church, I hated it. absolutely hated it. Terrified me. I sat through some of the famous or infamous, you know, 3 or 4 hour sermons on tribulation. And it was awful. I never felt better or good or encouraged or inspired when we preached about tribulation. And I wonder, but you know, God gives us everything for our good. And maybe the way that we look at it, we need a change of perspective. That if we're going to learn about it and teach it and preach it, it needs to be for our good. So how can we look at tribulation as something that is for our good, something beneficial, something that we want to hear about and receive that strengthens us? So let's turn to Matthew 24. Christ is, of course, with his disciples. He gathers them together. Matthew 24, outside of the temple. And he tells them of what's going to come. Something scary. In verse 2, he says to them, "Do you not see all these things?" He points it. They're on the mountain and they're looking down upon the Temple Mount. "Assuredly I say to you, not one stone shall be left here upon another that shall not be thrown down." More than Jerusalem itself, the city proper, or the walls of Jerusalem, the temple was the center of their society. Everything came from the temple. It was who they were. It was what they believed in. It's like Christ bringing you up to, you know, I don't know, look at the White House, to look at our nation and say, all going to be obliterated. And it's said in such a way that you're thinking, today? Right now? In verse 3, "Now he sat on the Mount of Olives, and the disciples came to him privately, saying, 'Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?'" That's what everybody wants to know. Everybody's kind of looking around and thinking, is it happening now? You know, again, that pressure. It's building. "And Jesus answered and said to them, 'Take heed that no one deceives you.'" This is important. This is the first thing he says. And he's warning them because you can be deceived. "For many will come in my name, saying, 'I am the Christ,' and will deceive many." Again, we look at this and we understand that there are some who raise themselves up and say, "I am the Messiah." You know, that happened right around the time of Christ. They were kind of popping up all over the place. And that is possible. But it is also those who come declaring Christ to be the Messiah, but do not lead people to truth, who do not lead them to the true religion. And people are deceived. "And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled." Can any of you watch the evening news without being a little troubled? Concerned? Because we see things escalating. "For all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet." You know, the disciples thought, that's it. This is it. This is the time. We've been under this We've been enslaved. We are under the bondage of the yoke of the Romans. Verse 7, for nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. They saw this. And there will be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. It says all of these are the beginning of sorrows. Brethren, we see these things happening. But you know what? They saw it then too. And they were sure that Christ was going to return in their lifetime. Because they were thinking, how can this get any worse? They saw wars. They saw crucifixions of Christ, of other people that they knew and loved. Surely, this is the end. Verse 8, all of these are the beginning of sorrows. Just the beginning. Brethren, we are told that we will endure tribulation. And everyone always has. So often we think, oh, that's it. We're the generation. We're the ones who are going to go through the tribulation. Well, so did everyone who came before us. They've all been through tribulation. If they haven't, how could they have even been considered to be ready for God's kingdom? How many of you have ever suffered? Felt like there was a moment in your life when I can't take anymore. It's just too much. Everyone goes through these things. In verse 8, these are the beginnings of sorrows. In verse 9, and they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Well, they went through that. Right? Great pressure. That word is thalipsis. It does mean pressure. Also to be afflicted, to have anguish, to be burdened, to have persecution, tribulation, and trouble. Verse 10, and then many will be offended, will betray one another, and will hate one another. It doesn't seem like there's a group within our world today that is not at odds with everyone else. It's not just your country or your kingdom, but your race, your ethnicity, your sex, your gender, all these things, your politics. And many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations. And then the end will come. You know, there are many who think, well, that's it. We've done it. The gospel has to have reached every nation in the world at this point, right? Well, it probably has. But again, that word actually means peoples. I don't know that everyone in the world has heard the gospel yet. I don't know that we've reached that point. Lawlessness abounds, and the love of many grows cold. And he who endures to the end shall be saved. So often this is what we think of, this enduring of holding out. And we're enduring tribulation, great pressure, and it's building. And we can feel it. You know, Everyone wants to know when this tribulation is going to happen. It's great pressure. I'm going to share something with you, and it's pure speculation. Okay? This is Dave from the book of Dave, meaning nothing. Because when we read these things, again, just like the disciples, we think, well, when's that going to happen? Who is going to be the beast power? Who are the two witnesses? You know, I've met several, very convinced that they were one of the witnesses, or they both were the witnesses. And I always think, that's not really a job I'd want to sign up for. I mean, if you read what actually happens to them, I don't want that. I have no idea who the two witnesses are. Again, you know, if you're putting down money, I'm going with Darris McNeely and Steve Myers. But Gary Petty's he's such a good speaker. Maybe so. No. But I'm kidding. You know, it's kind of ridiculous to kind of speculate, but people do. We always wonder, is the vaccine the mark of the beast? I guarantee we've heard that. I don't know. I haven't got a clue. It hasn't been given to me. And I suspect it hasn't been given to you either. But we're told to watch. Because it might be. But we're told to watch and to be ready. Pressure that builds up and anxiety and fear tends to immobilize us. It tends to stop us in our tracks. And we're so focused on what could be happening over here that we're not actually doing what we need to be doing. This is one of the things that I believe Satan rejoices in when he builds up pressure, when he can see tribulation rising and what that makes to happen. Because kind of my philosophy, or not my philosophy, okay, my speculation. Tribulation is pressure. Everyone has been under tribulation of one form or another. We have all felt it. And it feels like we are experiencing it. And as we look at the history of our church and the understanding of prophecy as we have it, that there is also a specific time of great pressure. And we look at, and one of the theories is that there will be a 7-year period of tribulation. And then you can break that into two sections. You know, if people look at the book of Daniel, the 70 weeks prophecy. So there might be 3.5 years of great pressure, and then 3.5 years of great pressure, great tribulation. I don't know. But it feels like we're under pressure now. And as we see things happening, as we see prophetic things happening, we have to ask ourselves, how is this for our good? Can we use this time for our good? How are we going to allow this pressure to affect us? Because there is coming a time of great tribulation, a specific time period. We'll look at verse 21 of Matthew 24. This is Christ is speaking about a specific time. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been seen since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. This is a specific time period, brethren. And it will be like no tribulation, no trial, no war, no plague, no famine that has ever struck the earth before. Again, I wonder, are we in tribulation, pressure building up to that time? Because we are under pressure now. We can feel it. So much more than I've ever experienced in my lifetime. But there are others who have. Brethren, one of the things that I think we can see under great pressure is, again, the cracks that happen within ourselves, within our own anxiety levels, our fear, the things that how we react to others. And Satan does not care what divides the church of God. He doesn't care. He just cares about the division. I really don't believe Satan cares about doctrines. Doesn't care. It's anything he can use to divide people, particularly the church. You know, it could be the vaccine. It could be calendars. It could be, the wearing of tassels. It could be masks. It could be politics. You name it. I do believe that we have an opportunity during this time of pressure to focus on what's actually important. You know, one of the things that I've noticed is that as the Church of God has so many different splits and divisions and groups, how many of us are praying for people who are suffering through trials and afflictions, particularly COVID, who maybe you haven't seen or been with in church in many years? God can use this for our good. You know, during this time when Christ told the disciples that not one stone would be left upon another, that happened. 70 AD. Jerusalem was destroyed. The temple was torn down. Not one stone was left upon another. And the Jews kept waiting for the Messiah, kept waiting for the guy, and there'd be false ones that would come up, and they'd have little rebellions. And then finally, amidst all the divisions and factions within those who were Jews, all the religious and political, all of the family differences, they were very, very divided. But they got so sick and tired of waiting for the Messiah to show up and waiting for their freedom, they joined forces and they wiped out the Roman garrison that was in Jerusalem. They cleaned the Romans out of Israel. They fought together. And then they went back to Jerusalem. Well, Rome was not going to put up with this, right? So Rome sent legion after legion down to Israel. And the Jews went into Jerusalem and they shut the gates. And they were pretty well fortified. And the Romans gathered outside and just waited and waited and waited. And you know what happened inside? Pressure built. Because those factions had not been healed or fixed. They were still against one another. They were still arguing and fighting about who was the best, who was going to be in charge, who was in control. And this went on for months and months, and the Romans couldn't get in until some of those factions decided that they were going to seek power outside. And so they made deals with the Romans. I'll tell you what, we'll let you in over on this eastern gate, and you guys can come in, and you're gonna attack this group that we're against, and you're going to leave us in charge. You'll still, you know, you'll be the Romans, you'll have it again, but we'll run things because we're the right ones. Except there were at least two other groups who thought they had the same deal. And so the Romans, very cunning, made this deal with opposing sides. Okay, but only on this night. This is the time when you're going to open those gates, and we'll come in and, you know, we'll shake on it. And so that time came. Gates were flung open and the Romans came in. And you know how they differentiated between which group was which? They didn't. They were all Jews. And they were all there to be killed and enslaved. They just started killing, butchering, destroying, burning, raping, pillaging. It wasn't until they got to the temple that the different warring factions figured out that the Romans were the enemy. And so by the time that they actually gathered to try and fight on the steps leading up to the temple, it was too late. Even archaeologists say that is the only place where there's signs of a unified fight. The Romans documented it. But it was too late. And so they were taken into bondage and slavery and scattered across Europe, the Middle East. Think they'd have learned, right? You know, in the 1930s, when Germany was coming to power again, Hitler, the Nazi Party, there were Jews all across Europe. And there were factions and divisions, and, you know, they didn't agree, and a lot of it was sometimes not just religious, but it was social. You know, the rich ones didn't affiliate with the poor ones. Their family divisions. Well, our family goes back to this line. The Nazis did not differentiate between Jews. When they started rounding them up, they didn't see that there was one that was better than the other. They were all just Jews. It was during that time that some of those differences finally went away again. And they realized that we're family, we're brethren, and we're all under attack, tribulation, pressure. Brethren, I think we have an opportunity during these times of tribulation and pressure for the bride to be refined. Because I don't think that the bride is differentiated between letters or numbers. It's not a brand or a stamp. It is the name of God. Great pressure can do a lot. It can divide, which is what Satan definitively wants. Or it can unite. We have a choice to make. And again, my speculation is that we have an opportunity to make it now. God will prepare His bride. I want to turn to Revelations 12. Because this is what Satan wants, is for people to turn on each other. To say, no, my way is right. No, my way is right. Well, your way is wrong. Well, then you must be evil. That's what Satan wants. He wants to stir up that fear, that animosity, that pressure, to turn people against one another. He is a fiery dragon, a roaring lion, and he is the source of that pressure upon this earth. Revelations 12, in verse 13. Now when the dragon saw that he had been cast to the earth, he persecuted the woman who gave birth to the male child. Again, amongst the church, we have always considered that, of course, Satan being the dragon, but the woman is the church. But the woman was given two wings of a great eagle that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. Again, as we church speak, is the place of safety, where she is nourished for a time and times and half a time. Again, our understanding of prophecy is that this is a 3.5-year period, a time, and then times, plural, and then half a time, 3.5 years, a time of great tribulation. From the presence of the serpent, she's given that protection. So the serpent spewed water out of his mouth like a flood after the woman, trying to overwhelm. You know, we think of that water and that pressure being built and thrown upon the church, that she might, or that he might cause her to be carried away by the flood. What are all the things that we can be carried away by, overwhelmed by? But the earth helped the woman. And the earth opened its mouth and swallowed up the flood which the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. And the dragon was enraged. This is an impotent rage with the woman. And he went to make war on the rest of her offspring, who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Now, there are those who keep the commandments of God, but they reject Christ. And there are those who say, yes, we believe in Christ, but we don't like those laws, those rules. And they reject those. It takes both. And I don't think it's just us. The desire or the need to feel like we're the only ones actually turns up the pressure on us, doesn't it? Again, Satan seeks to divide, to destroy, and he pours out this pressure. It does happen within the church of God. It can cause people to turn on one another, to attack one another. You know, think of the things we've just been through with issues, with COVID, the fear of it. We can attack one another. Well, I see it this way, and if we do it that way, we could all die. If we turn on one another, brethren, we will not survive. If we give in to that pressure, a house divided on itself cannot stand. We have to be stronger within ourselves than the pressure on the outside. That's what keeps us from imploding, from having that pressure overwhelm us. And that's what's coming. Whether we're in it today or not, we know that that time is coming. So how can we use this pressure, this tribulation, for our good? Job suffered incredible tribulation. You know, he suffered more than any of us have ever suffered before. He suffered both physical, emotional, and spiritual. Satan was after him with a vengeance. And the thing is, Job couldn't understand why. But I haven't done anything. I am righteous. You ever wonder why? You know, it's like, well, but I'm keeping God's Sabbath, I'm keeping His laws, I'm going to the holy days, I tithe, I don't eat pork. Why am I sick? Why do these things happen to me? And we question and we wonder, and again, that I've got to know. Job didn't know. If we're not careful, we can fall into the same trap that he and his friends did. The only difference between Job and his friends, truly, I believe, again, my speculation, was that Job knew what the outcome would be. Job 23 and verse 8. Job is in that place of why? What's going on? You know, I don't know which end is up. Job 23 in verse 8. Job 23 and verse 8. He says, look, I go forward, and he's not there, and backwards, and I cannot perceive him. Look, I don't understand this. Why is this happening? He says, when he works on the left hand, I cannot behold him. I know he's doing something. I just can't figure it out. When he turns to the right hand, I cannot see him. in verse 10. But he knows the way that I take. When he has tested me, I shall come forth as gold. He knows he's being refined. That all those sufferings that were poured out upon him because of Satan wanting to destroy him, the one thing that Job understands is that I'll be better when I come through this. God has a purpose and a reason. Great tribulation refines us. It's for our good. The hardest natural substance in the world is formed under incredible pressure and incredible heat. Diamonds are the purest form of transparent carbon. They are actually incredibly rare. And again, the pressures that it takes to form a diamond. So these numbers don't necessarily mean anything to me. 1500 centigrade or 2732 degrees Fahrenheit. That's almost 3,000 degrees Fahrenheit. I don't like it to be 100 degrees Fahrenheit. It's great heat. And the pressure, again, is listed in things that I don't even understand. But scientists described it as, imagine 4,000 fully grown men all standing on your 1 foot. Immense heat, immense pressure is what it takes to create a diamond. The Greek word for diamond is adamas, meaning unconquerable. That's what extreme heat and pressure does. It creates something beautiful, valuable, rare, and precious, unconquerable. This is one of the reasons why I believe God calls his people his jewels. Precious jewels. Zechariah 9, verse 16. Zechariah 9, and verse 16. It says, the Lord will save his people. Then the Lord will be seen over them, and his arrow will go forth like lightning. The Lord God will blow the trumpet and go with whirlwinds from the south. The Lord of hosts will defend them. They shall devour and subdue with sling stones. They shall drink and roar as if with wine. They shall be filled with blood like basins, like the corners of the altar. The Lord their God will save them in that day of tribulation. A day of great pressure of suffering as the flock of his people. For they shall be like the jewels of a crown, lifted like a banner over his land. Isaiah 62. Isaiah 62 and verse 1. For Zion's sake, I will not hold my peace. And for Jerusalem's sake, I will not rest until her righteousness goes forth as brightness. This is what it takes to bring that righteousness out, to let it shine. And her salvation is a lamp that burns. The Gentiles shall see your righteousness, and all kings your glory. You shall be called by a new name, which the mouth of the Lord will name. You shall also be a crown of glory in the hand of the Lord, and a royal diadem in the hand of your God. Brethren, we don't start out this way. We start out carnal, dust of the earth. And out of that, God says, I'm going to create something beautiful, and it will be to the glory of him. To all the world. Any of you remember, I think it was John Anderson, back in the 80s, there was a country western song entitled I'm Just an Old Hunk of Coal, But I'm Gonna Be a Diamond Someday. My mom hated that song. It was so western. She said it made her teeth hurt. You know, but that's what God does with us. Through that tribulation, through pressure, through that fiery furnace, he makes something beautiful. Tribulation is what refines us. It's what makes us a diamond. Unconquerable. Because we survive it. Psalm 66 and verse 10. For you, O God, have tested us. This is the testing that a jeweler would do to determine the quality. You have refined us as silver is refined. You brought us into the net. You laid affliction on our backs. Again, tribulation, trial, suffering. You have caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but you brought us out to rich fulfillment. Tribulation is going to happen. It's always happened. From the time that Christ first spoke those words, his disciples went through great tribulation. They were refined by it. They are going to rule with him in God's kingdom. Each generation has gone through tribulation. You know, those who were looking at what was happening, Mr. Armstrong back in the day, at what was coming for World War II, they went through those things. We haven't seen anything like that. I don't know that there's anyone in here old enough to remember that time, but parents did. Grandparents. We haven't. Not like that. But we will be made precious in his sight. Something else, brethren. I'll leave you with another analogy. How many of you have ever used a pressure cooker? Yeah. Well, you know, modern day, we have things that are much safer than what I grew up with. They have those, what do they call it, Instapots? Yeah, it's a computer-controlled, you know, pressure cooker, so it monitors it and never lets it get to that dangerous point where it actually explodes. But I grew up with the old-fashioned one. You know, my mom and my grandmother cooking with it, and there was always kind of like that, it could be a bomb, you know. If the pressure and the heat inside of it builds up to the point that it exceeds the strength of its container. However, it was worth it for Grandma's chicken and dumplings. It was the best chicken and dumplings in the world. It was amazing what Grandma could do with an old hen. This tough old bird that's like, ugh, who would ever want to eat that? You couldn't. But you put it in enough heat and enough pressure, and it tenderized it. Made it succulent. It brought out flavors that you didn't know were there. It became the best. It was delicious. See, God can use great pressure, great tribulation, in the same way with us. I truly believe, brethren, that within the body of Christ, tribulation is what will soften our hearts. It will take the stiffness out of our necks. It will be for our good. And we will come out of it precious in his eyes. Unconquerable. Jewels. With a future. Revelation 7. Revelation 7. In verse 9. After these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude, which no one could number, of all nations, again, these are peoples, tribes, peoples and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lamb, clothed with white robes, with palm branches in their hands, and crying with a loud voice, saying, "Salvation belongs to our God who sits on the throne and to the Lamb." And all the angels stood around the throne and the elders and the four living creatures and fell on their faces before the throne and worshiped God, saying, "Amen, blessings and glory and wisdom, thanksgiving and honor and power and might be to our God forever and ever. Amen." This is what we're waiting for. This is what we're hoping for, again, through tribulation. And then one of the elders answered, saying to me, "Who are these arrayed in white robes? And where did they come from?" And I said to him, "Sir, you know." And he said to me, "These are the ones who came out of great tribulation and washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. Therefore, they are before the throne of God and serve Him day and night in His temple. And He who sits on the throne will dwell among them. And they shall neither hunger any more, nor thirst any more. And the sun shall not strike them, nor any heat. For the Lamb who is in the midst of the throne will shepherd them and lead them to living fountains of water. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." The reward and the comfort of having endured and overcome, having been through that great pressure, the tribulation that will beset the world. Brethren, that time is going to come. Pressure will increase. We just have to decide how we're going to let it affect us. We get to choose, brethren, how we look at prophecy, how we look at the times ahead. Are we going to let it build up and make us afraid and make us turn on one another? Or will we choose to be refined, to be purified, to be washed in the blood of the Lamb? Brethren, if we choose to be refined, purified, then tribulation will only ever be for our good.